The website for this class was created about 15 years ago. And I've decided it's time to redo it. And it's proving to be very challenging on a lot of levels. Things have changed a lot over 15 years and way beyond that. And the website really reflected a kind of orthodox approach to the teaching that I've been involved in since 1967. Clearly, I have been teaching what I call the work, which is, I would define it as Rudy's practice, which Rudy called Kundalini Yoga, and which I've continued to call Kundalini Yoga for all these years. And the website really kind of assumes a very basic entry point into this whole practice. It tries to define what yoga is, what meditation is, what our lineage is. It talks about something called Kashmir Shaivism, which, to be honest, I've never read anything about. But In the old days, in the ashram, post-Rudi, people were trying to understand our root connection to spiritual practice and decided that Kashmir Shaivism best defined who we were and use it as a kind of philosophical base for the practice, which has been defined in many ways as an energetic understanding of the universe as energy, as oneness, as one energy. It's not dissimilar to what I have been teaching recently, but it is really a practice about which I know almost zilch. And when I look at the website, I keep wondering about our culture and how much it's moved on in the years since it was first created, and I keep saying, do I need to talk about what yoga is? Clearly, many people have begun practicing yoga, but are practicing it in the way that we see now on every little unrented building that's now got a yoga studio in it. You know, there's so many forms of yoga, and there's, you know, hot yoga, and there's, I mean, there's so many different kinds of yoga, and they're all about, many of them are about a kind of exercise program, kind of feel better, you know, physically and mentally feel better. And in a sense, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. In a way, yeah, feel better. It's a good thing. And there is an old practice that goes back thousands of years that will stretch out your body and will give you a capacity to breathe and will teach you about relaxation and give you poses to either make you stronger or in most cases make you more limber, to make you feel more flow in your body, whatever that means. But in the old days with yoga, there was this idea that yoga meant to join, to yoke, to come together with what? With yourself, basically. And it kind of helped you get there by unknotting you in a way, to unravel so many of the holding patterns, the physical tensions in the body. And so if you did certain poses, you would find things breaking up in you, and that's absolutely real. And some people even discover when they meditate that their body goes into spontaneous poses, which is really kind of interesting. They're very yogic. And meditation often came at the end of a yogic practice, meaning that after you were done, you would lie there or sit there. In the American tradition, you usually lie there and just do a relaxation, maybe from the feet up or the head down, and your body feels like, oh my God, I could do this forever, and it's really wonderful, it's very peaceful, it's a really good thing. I think in India, you did yoga to prepare for meditation, which is a little more rigorous. It's not just relaxation, it's bringing yourself bodily to the table, sitting up and maintaining a position that's usually defined and legs folded, hands thumped together, palms on your knees. And for most people, either eyes closed or slightly open or focused on one object. And you would just sit and breathe and try to go inward. And in the ancient traditions, they discovered or talked about anyway these energy centers inside called chakras. And they described them as being kind of open or closed and gave you techniques for expanding them. And so meditation took on a kind of a practice. Some people didn't have any access to chakras. They just sat there and tried to feel open, quiet, discovering still points, feeling connected to oneself. These are all things that were described and I talk about in the website, because my understanding for all the early years of my practice, decades really, if I sat and I did our breathing exercise and I opened and worked above my drama, my daily drama, above my tensions, if I could break down my rigidities, if I could find flow where there was a stuckness, if I could find some kind of way of really functioning more effectively in the world, I would have, one, a better life, but two, I would have a deeper and more profound meditation. And so I kept working this system. And here's what's good about it. I had an amazing life. I really had to work hard to get above the tensions that were part of my life. Part of them are called marriage, part of them are called child rearing, and part of them are called career. And I picked a soul crushing, but let me be more specific, ego crushing career. And that's called Hollywood. There is nothing that shatters ego more directly than trying to work in a business where you are being judged and reviewed constantly. Not just by your partners and by the people you're working with and the studios and the producers, but ultimately by the world. First of all, by the press of the world that comes in and reviews everything you do, and usually not well, at least in my case. Often below the belt kind of reviews that were, I mean, they used to give me packets like this after a movie opened that I could read of all the reviews that had been published in America. They didn't go worldwide at that point. And I would usually start at the top of the pile, and they were usually very smart. They would try to give you the good reviews first. And I would read the first few reviews, and okay, that feels good. And then I'd start to get into the density of them. And they were mostly awful. The only best reviews I ever had was for a movie called Stuart Little 2. But everything else I've ever done has been absolutely obliterated by critics, including Ghost and Jacob's Ladder and My Life and all these films that I worked so hard on to create. And if it were not for the fact that I had maintained a meditative practice all of the years I was doing all of this, I would not have survived it. Because so much of what came at me was so painful, so personal, such a dynamic attack on my psyche. Why would I write something like this? Why? Who cares about this stuff? You know, I can't see deeply enough into anything. I went on and on. The attacks were really unpleasant. But I would sit every day, and I would do this Kashmir Shaivism, Kundalini yoga meditation. And that meditation made me feel grounded, if you will, stabilized, quiet. And it began to give me the capacity to separate from the pain of attack. So I started watching my ego be dismantled in public, and I went, Okie doke. I signed up for that. It's the business. It's what one gets. I mean, you can get the same thing working in a corporate world. You can get the same thing working in a legal profession. You can get it anywhere. You know, people are judging you, and you know you're being judged, and you know that you could lose your job even. And you fight like mad to hold on in some way, to present the ego structure that, you know, will be able to ride above and impress people and give them what they want and keep you safe, if you will. That's what ego does. So in Hollywood, there was no safety net. You just put yourself out there and you watched what happened. And what happened was, usually in my case, difficult, and yet somehow or another, most of the time people kept going to the movies. They kept paying for the movies. And ultimately, if a movie makes money, you're okay. You're okay. Not okay emotionally and psychically, but you can keep working, which was very important to me. Winning an Oscar, I have to tell you, winning an Oscar keeps things going no matter how ugly they may get in the other realms. That it's a little totemic thing that is your, it's like the ring of the Lord of the Rings. You know, you've got this thing that will protect you through whatever you're going through. And so it did. It kept me going for a very long career. And so during the whole time I was going through this career and being torn apart, ripped apart, shattered on so many levels, I would sit every single day, twice a day, in the morning and at night, and I would just empty out. And I would do my Kundalini yoga practice, and I kept feeling I am holding on to something bigger than me. I am connecting every day with something higher. I am freeing myself of my attachment to being perceived as special or wonderful or whatever, creative, because I wasn't being perceived that way. And so I just found grounding in my practice. But the problem for me was always that I was waiting to get to awakening or enlightenment or liberation. I was waiting for the moment where I would have this enormous capacity to be absolutely free within the confines of whatever Bruce represented. I wanted the power of liberation. I wanted the dynamic of being able to go into the world as a liberated guy and go, hey guys, I'm free and you're not. You know, and it was a very, and I can help you get there. That was my way of owning it, you know. I am free and I can now bring you to that place. And also, I had had, of course, big psychedelic experiences in the 60s, so freedom to me was something cosmic. It was like I was trying not to be bound by the earth. I don't want to be bound by the normal restrictions of human experience. I wanted to be this vast cosmic awareness that knew everything about everybody. I wanted to be able to look at people and get the whole picture. I wanted to be able to go into people and go fix it, you know, or obliterate them, I suppose. I mean, I never really had that need, but I had a lot of Hollywood enemies and I never felt the need to destroy them. If anything, I kept loving them. I've never understood exactly what that was, but that kept coming out of my practice. They were doing me a favor. They were doing me a favor. They were tearing me apart, and I kept saying, thank you. Thank you. And it was really hurtful and painful, but it was good. So here I had this hunger to be spiritually vast, and what I was becoming was basically a fairly productive, successful, relatively good human being. You know, I was pretty good at child rearing, if not great. I was pretty good at being a husband, not perfect. I was a teacher, and that being a teacher, I always knew I had limitations, but I always thought I knew a little bit more than everybody else, and I could provide a little bit of insight into that. Anyway, guys, let me bring this into bigger focus. At one point along the way, I said, this isn't working. I'm not getting there. I knew there was this vast cosmic reality, and I was still just a little guy working in Hollywood, working in the world. And I didn't know what to do with it. I was failing. I was failing. Something I was doing was wrong. I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to get there. How do I get there? How do I finally arrive at this oneness? And it was really frustrating. And I really got to a point where I said, I can't do it. I don't know how to do it. I give up. I said to myself, I'm happy as I am. It's good enough. I'm a good guy. I've had an interesting ride. I have people around me that I love. I give up. Well, that's the key. Give up. Give up. Give up trying to be or get to any point or to anything. Just give it up. And what happens when you give that up? What can happen? You realize that the there you are trying to get to is here. That you've never not been there or here. That you will never ever be anywhere but there or here. And that what is here appears to be you. But then what took place in my situation was this washing away of the person who was here and the realization that there was only here. That it was not being moderated by or modulated by anyone. It just was. There is this person, there was this mind existed, but it wasn't owned. It just was there. And there was just being that didn't have boundaries. And it was not ownable. Not only was it not ownable, it was not comprehensible. It was not comprehendable. You could not know what it was. You could not know what you were. You could only know that you are. I've talked about this a lot, and all those talks are on that website that I'm trying to create a new introduction to. And here's the issue. Once you awaken, the focus on here is so strong that the idea of getting there seems somewhat superfluous. Because you want to tell people you don't have to fight and rise above and break down tensions and do your Kundalini exercise. You don't need to do all that to get here because you're already here. This fight to get there is an unnecessary ingredient because what are you fighting against and what are you fighting for? But having just said that, I would never have arrived at here if I hadn't struggled to get there. So I can't dismiss the practice. I can't tell people, don't do decades worth of Kundalini yoga, because it worked in this situation. That the struggle that will fail you works. And it works if you do it with enormous commitment. The harder you work, the louder you bang down the doors of heaven, the harder you say, I want this, the more you get the attention, the squeaky wheel attention of the universe. You can't get it if you're going, well, you know, I'm going to sit every once in a while and I'll try to get there. It won't work. It won't work for every practical reason. The person who is making the most noise gets the energy. They get it. You get it. The universe wants you to have it. But you have to make enough of an effort that you believe in your own commitment, that you believe in what you're asking for. So when it's finally delivered, when there's this big whoosh or minor little candle blowing out experience of the elimination of the you, your first response is not, oh my God, what was that? What was that? What happened? Your first response is, The universe will often deliver it to people who are not ready. They definitely did that to me with LSD in the 60s. They said, here you are. And I freaked out. It was too big. It was too much. It was incomprehensible on every level. It was so real. It was so dark. It was so frightening to my mind and my ego. The ego was being shattered at that time, and it didn't know what to do, and it was striving to hold back onto something. It was trying to interpret everything. You know, it was a not ready experience. On the other hand, without that experience, this journey would not have taken place. I would not have a website to write and rewrite. So what I have decided to do is maintain my focus on the practice we do and on Kundalini Yoga, even though I say now in the website that I no longer call it Kundalini Yoga. I don't know what it is. I'm kind of referring to it as, in Rudy's terms, the work. It's just the work. The work of trying to get to where you are is really what it is. And it's a crazy amount of work that's required to get there. Actually, it isn't a crazy amount of work. It's a crazy amount of work until your mind is willing to accept that you're worthy of it. Of course you're worthy of it because you're here. I mean, again, this is what you hear in every non-dualistic school of talk, you know? There's nothing to do. This very moment is you being here. This is the absolute truth of reality right now. And your mind goes, yeah, but, you know, I haven't finished my practice, and there's more I have to do, and I'm not a perfect person, and I don't love this person, and I'm really terrible with that, and, you know, you bring in all of these issues that make you unqualified for being what you are. And then the really tricky phenomenon that's here is even that mind event that tells you you're not worthy is part of your worthiness. Even the fact that your mind is trying to give you reasons not to accept your wholeness and oneness, you are even in that one. That's why there's such an element in awakening, of awakened people, of going even that, or even this. Meaning, no matter what you discover, no matter how imbalanced, how inappropriate, how insignificant, how out of whack you think you are, even that is one with all there is. There's nothing you can do to disqualify yourself. Because you're here. Try not to be here. I mean, I'm not trying to push that button too hard. But people who literally try to blow their brains out to not be here, I believe from my own dealings with people who've done that, that you don't get out of here. You just create another here, a totally different shattered here. And not one that is more appealing than this one. Or unappealing. Well, it's more unappealing. Here is eternal. Here is what we are. We are not the form that occurs within here, although we are that. We are here itself. We are being itself. We are presence itself. We are infinite eternal truth itself. We are reality and the absolute itself. Exactly as we are right now. Exactly as we are right this second. So I'm trying to write a website that says that and that carries you on the journey a little bit to this understanding. And I don't know if it's going to attract people or explain things to people because it's a lot to say. You know, so when you look at it sometime in November when it will be in, or October when it will be in place, you will see. It looks very similar, but it's subtly different because it talks about the journey to now. And it talks about the renaming of some of the things we do, the repurposing of some of the things we do. Not that we're trying to give up the practice of yoga and Kundalini Yoga and the work. We're trying to embrace it and engage it consciously with the deep and extraordinary understanding that what it delivers is ultimately frustrating until we finally go, I surrender. And if you remember, the key of Rudy's teaching is, please help me to surrender. Well, that's what this practice is doing. It's helping you to surrender. But it's not just a word, it's not just a phrase, it's not just an idea. It's a real thing you have to do. You have to give up. And when you give up, ultimately, there will be no you left. And that's liberation. And that's my website. Any questions? I love that I'm so clear always. Nobody ever has a question, of course.
Not a question, but just a noticing that, you know, through your work, just being present enough to know that, hey, I'm not here, and being honest with that, sounds like was, you know, the stepping stone, the vehicle that
yes. helps you. Yeah. No, exactly. I'll tell you something interesting. I've gone back and looked at my talks before the awakening occurred and after the awakening. They're the same talks. What does that mean? I mean, the awakening was a very dramatic, it seemed dramatic. You know, the absence is so powerful. The absence is so reflective that there is something responding to absence, really. There's the absence of this little spark of you, but being absent is actually an experience. You know, it's not an experience you are having exactly. The universe is known as there's an absence of this thing through which it was doing its dance. And then what you realize, of course, is that it's still there. It's just dancing differently. It's just, it's more puppetry in a way. There's nobody sitting saying, I want to do this, I am that. I mean, or even if there is, it's not a very loud voice. It's a very quiet little voice that just basically says, thy will be done. Thy will be done. Over and over and over. It also says, wow, a lot. And it also goes, thank you.
I have a question about last week's talk.
That was like 5 million years ago. I haven't known. Well, okay.
It was about quality time.
Quality
or
time.
It was really about time.
Okay.
And so I feel like I get caught up a lot in time. And so that was great to hear that, but I just feel like I need more about time. I don't know, is there a way you can talk about, like when we are caught up in time, to surrender that or what, I don't know.
Time really is ego. Ego and time are synonymous in some way. Ego is very involved in time. In other words, it's separating itself out of timelessness and making it about a concrete thing, which is time. Time arises in timelessness. It arises in the vastness of being. And when it arises, it means I am separate now from myself. That's all it means. It means I am now looking at past, present, future. And I am now involved in, I've got to get there in 20 minutes. I've got to do this. I've got to get that done by such and such a thing. I. And it's all about the time experience. Rudy would say, take a deep breath. Ask for help to surrender. What are you surrendering? Well, let's put it this way. Surrender time. Surrender. Just, and you'll see, you'll start to feel relaxed, less caught, more available to being just open, and time will waft out the window for a little bit. And you'll just be still again. You'll be back. You will have used your Kundalini practice to return to openness and oneness. And then everything is fine, and a little thought or something, because thoughts for me always rise from around the belly. I don't know if everybody feels that, but it rises up. And part of the mind, which is up here, feels it or sees it coming up, and it can go, no. It's very simple, no. And the minute you do that, the thought goes, no, goes away. The minute the mind sees a thought coming up that has a valence with attached to it, that means something to you, that says, oh yeah, this one. The minute you even, as soon as you've gotten that far, it's full blown. It's taken over your head. And it can take over your head for a week, a month, a year. You know, it's very powerful. If you have a daily practice, you'll go, oh my God, that thing just took over. And you'll go, please help me to surrender, to let go of that thing, because it's owning me right now. It's completely owning me. And you take a deep breath, and this thing goes away. You know, or maybe you have to take 5 breaths, or maybe you have to work for an hour to really get free of that thing that came in. And now you know pretty much that, I'll use the word valence, because I like that from chemistry, you know, or physics, I don't know where it's from, but whatever, when this thing that's attached to an equation that is suddenly has great power to it, it's familiar. The minute those things start to come up, and they will keep coming up throughout your life until you have diffused all of them, or until you have a mechanism that is so strong, or until you awaken, where you, that stuff comes up and you just go, okay, up. It comes up like a storm in the sky. You know, I don't run into a cave and build a fire and hide from the lightning at this point. I just go inside, close the door, and turn on the TV or read a book. You know, that's all you have to do. But in the old days, no, a storm came up and it just took you over. You get to a point where it doesn't take you over. It's just a storm, meaning a mental storm in your head, or an emotional storm, or a mental one that sets off an emotional one, and then you're caught in it. And if they have certain valences, they really make you think that this has been going on for all my life. And that adds an enormous amount of weight to some of these things that come up. But it's not exactly real. The thing that's real is, again, the valence, which says this has attached to it history. This has a lot of history. And this is going to come up, and it's going to really be a big thought. Because you, once it has history, how do you get out of that one? So it explodes in a powerful way, and then you have an exercise now to get through that. That's all I can tell you. And until you are free of that world events where you keep identifying with thoughts and identifying with emotions, until you are liberated from that, you have to work it. And the working it is meditation, mindfulness, kundalini yoga, whatever you've got. Take what you've got and work it through so you're not a victim of it. Something in you is in charge of saying no to it. And you're saying no to time, time-bound thought, feeling, emotion. You're free of it. And that's a great gift. And you have it. You do have it. And so use it regularly. And the fact that you have to use it over and over is not a condemnation of you. You use it as that, but it's not that. It's basically, wow, I have a tool to overcome this enormous, potent thing that is part of the human condition. Not your condition, the human condition. Everybody has that. Every human being has that. And we're all caught by it. And most of us don't know what to do with it. And so we drink, we sex, whatever it is, you smoke something, you do something not to have to get caught by it. But then you're just caught by the drink and the sex and the thing. So then it compounds the problem. So Kundalini Yoga says, take a breath, ask for help to surrender, come to a class because I'm not caught by most of that stuff. And if that stuff comes up and I am, boy, does it reveal itself in a really powerful way. But for me, I've worked out 99.3% of that stuff. There's still stuff baked on the side of the pot, you know, that needs scrubbing. And I have people who scrub for me, who first of all show it to me, which is somebody has to do that, and then they help me with the scrubbing. Or I just go, okay, I just soak it. Let's put it that way. I soak it and it goes away. Okay, it's not a big deal. It's not the big deal that you think it is. The fact that you think it's a big deal makes it a big deal. As soon as you say it's a little deal, then it's a little deal. Your choice. And you learn that. You just learn that. And finally, when the you is gone, you'll go, ah, oh, I don't have to deal with that in that way anymore.
So I have felt stuck in my career for a while, and I'm just wondering about how to work with it, because, and should I, like, you know, I'm trying to just surrender the stuckness, but...
How do you surrender stuckness? What do you do to surrender it?
I just ask to surrender the stuckness.
But what does that mean?
To, you know, I guess try to be, well, there's a couple of things. There's being present to what is, or just trying to be present and then trying to find the joy in what is in the moment. But the stuckness sneaks in.
But you're saying stuckness as though it's a bad thing.
Yeah.
And you want out of it.
Well, yeah, I would like it to shift.
Yeah. So here's the problem. Wanting out of something reinforces the being that wants out. And that duality is at the source of suffering. The minute you truly surrender being stuck means you go, okay, I'm stuck. Mm-hmm. And you stop fighting against the glue and the stickiness, and you just be stuck. When you're just accepting truly being stuck without any kind of agenda behind it, mm-hmm. something interesting happens. And this is problematic because once I tell you this, you'll have an agenda. But the idea is you just go, okay, and this thing happens. It doesn't matter that you're stuck, so being stuck no longer sticks you. Mm-hmm. You're suddenly free within being stuck. That freedom is your freedom. Mm-hmm. And you can live stuck, and we're all stuck. We're stuck in our bodies, we're stuck in relationships, we're stuck with demands, we're stuck with not enough of something or too much of something, we're all stuck.
Yeah.
Once you say, I'm stuck, and don't try to get out of it, you become free within it. Mm-hmm. And when you're free within it, you may get out of it or you may not, it won't matter because mm-hmm. you don't care. You're free. Now, if you really have to get out of it and you want to get out of it, okay, you can do the Kundalini dance and say, please help me to surrender, and you can do a dance and it will consciously release some of that, and you might be able to step out onto dry land here and get out of the situation, but that doesn't teach you the greater lesson. And the greater lesson is accept what is, because true liberation comes from acceptance, not from fighting what is. And being stuck is fighting.
Yeah.
I know it's crazy because people want out so much. You know, I remember looking at the catalog for Omega Institute where they have thousands of classes going on, and I said, you know, there should be one title for this entire catalog, is get me out of here.
Yeah.
And the one thing you can't get is out of here.
Yeah.
Ever. That's scary. It's scary if you haven't figured it out.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, guys.
Thank you.